The narration.
Uparishtat.
Later in the eighth canto.
Vistarishyate.
Will be explained.
Yasha.
Of whom?
Bhagavan.
The Supreme Personality of Godhead.
Swayam.
Personally.
Akila Jagat Guruhu.
The Master of all the three worlds.
Narayanaha.
The Supreme Lord Narayana himself.
Dwari.
At the gate.
Gadapanahi.
Bearing the club in his hand.
Avatishtate.
Stands.
Nija jana anukampata
vrdeha. That's hard. Whose heart is always filled with mercy for his devotees.
Yena.
By whom?
Anugustena.
By the big toe.
Pada.
Of his foot.
Dashakundaraha.
Ravana, who had 10 heads.
Yojana Ayuta Ayutam.
A distance of 80,000 miles.
Dik Vijaye.
For the purpose of gaining victory over Bali Maharaj.
Uchatitaha.
Driven away. It's a translation. Shukadeva Goswami continued, my dear king, how shall I glorify the character of Bali Maharaj? The Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Master of the Three Worlds, who is the most compassionate to his own devotee, stands with club in hand at Bali Maharaj's door. When Ravana, the powerful demon, came to gain victory over Bali Maharaj, Vamanadeva kicked him a distance of 80,000 miles with his big toe. I shall explain the character and activities of Bali Maharaj later on in the eighth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. There's no purport to this text, but we don't have that much time to go read it. A whole lot of text, so I'm going to comment on this. So, Om Gana Timiranda Shad Manjana Shlakaya Chakshur Meditam Gena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. So, Bali Maharaj, of course, is the grandson of the great devotee Prahlad Maharaj, but although he's the grandson of the great devotee Prahlad Maharaj, he was considered to be born in a demon family, the family of the Daityas. Of course, we have Kashyapa Muni, who was married to many different wives. Two of the wives were Diti and Aditi. And also there's Danu and other wives like that. I mean, he had all sorts of interesting children. He had bird children from Vinata, snake children from Kadru. Interesting family, isn't it? Like if you have a family get-together of all the children of Kashyapa, you'll probably have all the species of life available. And some of the family members will eat each other. Like you have Garuda, of course, who was also Kashyapa Muni's son from Vinata. He'd be interested in eating the sons of Kadru, who are the serpents. So anyway, so it'd be an interesting feast where family members eat family members. But anyway, so that's another subject matter. So in any case, Kashyapa and Diti, they gave birth to the Daityas, or the sometimes considered demons, demon family. And demon family, genetically, they have some problems. Genetically, there's a demon gene there or something like that. There is actually genetic stuff that determines one's mentality to a certain extent, like modes of nature. Of course, if we're talking about demons, we're not talking about entities with like horns necessarily on their heads. But, you know, Krishna describes what a demon is in the Gita. You know, so much wealth do I have today, so much more wealth do I have tomorrow. In other words, someone who's greedy. That's what a demon is, generally. You understand? So when we talk about demon or demoniac mentality, that's the demoniac mentality, greed. Like there was one famous Wall Street person who said, greed is good. Right? At least that was a film. And that's considered a demoniac mentality. All right, so it's not necessarily that they're like rakshasas. Rakshasas are a particular type of demon who eat human beings. That's a rakshasa, man-eating. So there's certain genetic traits that are, let's say, inherited from one, let's say, from one generation to another. And it's dependent upon not only the genes, but the consciousness of the parents at the time of conception. But you can actually breed demons if you want. Did you know that? It's like you breed devotees. And I'll give you an interesting story from the Ramayana about this. Once upon a time, the demons felt very much disempowered because the demigods had become more powerful. The reason the demigods had become more powerful, this is a story in Bhagavatam, and also the Ramayana, is that the demigods had taken the nectar, the amrit, the nectar of immortality, that was given to them by the mercy of Mohini Murti, the female incarnation of Krishna. And the demigods had become immortal, basically speaking. Except for Rahu, of course, who also got partial immortality just for his head, until the rest of his body was chopped off by Mohini Murti, Vishnu. So, anyway, so the demons were thinking, the head of the demons, his name was Sumali. He was thinking, you know, how can we regain our power? We have to breed a nice demon. So they were thinking, how to breed a powerful demon? You know, this whole science of breeding was well known. It's called eugenics. You've heard about this before? Eugenics. This is something that Hitler was into in World War II, before World War II. That is breeding. He called it a super race. It's from Nietzsche, the supermensch, you know, superman, super race, whatever. And so the demons were thinking like this. Sumali, the head of the demons, the demon prime minister, he was thinking, let's breed a powerful demon who can defeat the demigods. So they were thinking, how to breed a nice demon? Well, we didn't have, he was thinking, we don't have any, like, powerful man demon to give the nice, powerful genes to a demon. But we have some, like, really good Rakshasa ladies. And he was thinking of his daughter. His daughter's name was Kekasi. And he said to Kekasi, my dear daughter, your business is to breed a powerful demon. And the way you're going to do that is to approach a Brahmin, a very powerful Brahmin, who is, you know, all the mantras and powers and everything like that. So we'll get, the combination will be a Brahma Rakshasa. That's the most dangerous type of demon. Well, I mean, ordinary demons, they're just like puny, like Prabhupada said. Tiny demons. So Brahma Rakshasas are so powerful, they can actually employ all the weapons of the demigods and also have demoniac powers simultaneously. It's like the worst possible combination you can come up with, right? So he sent his daughter to this sage of Vishrava. Sometimes pronounced Vishravas. And this sage was just an innocent sage. He was just meditating, doing his business. And previously he had been married, well, he was married to another lady, and he had a very nice son, and the son's name was Kuvera, who was the treasurer of the demigods. So she goes to him and basically seduces him. You know, the poor sage is minding his business in the forest, you know, chanting Om, Om, Om. And this beautiful demon comes to him. Because demons can be beautiful. It's not they're all ugly. So he comes to him and says, I love you. or whatever. I'm not so expert in these areas, so I don't know what they say. So she comes and she says, I want you, I want to marry you. And he says, what? Get away from me, girl. You know, he wasn't so attached or attracted. But she gave the argument that, you know, if a lady approaches you, this was the part of the Vedic system, a lady approaches you and she's not married and she's in love, you have to accept her. And she said, this is dharma. All right. And so eventually he succumbed to that argument. And they had a Gandharva marriage. Gandharva marriage means where you exchange garlands, you understand? There's different types of Vedic marriages. There's Rakshasa marriage where you kidnap the girl, like with Krishna kidnapping Rukmini. And Gandharva is where you just exchange garlands, that's like Shantanu had with Ganga Devi. And so they got married, and he basically married a demon princess. And he didn't realize that she was so demoniac, but she acted nice in the beginning. It's like a sword in a gilded sheath, you know, where you keep the swords. So he was bewildered. And because he married this demon princess, and his brahmachari disciples recognized that, they all left him. The poor guru was left without any disciples. They said, what is Gurudev doing with this demon lady? And so, the story from the Ramayana, Valmiki Ramayana. So can you imagine that? You know, your guru marries a demon. I mean, he's a householder, he can be married, it's not a bad thing, but, you know, marries his Rakshasa lady. Like, who did he marry? Rakshasini. So, anyways, well, it'd be like someone's guru in ISKCON would marry a meat-eating, someone who owns a slaughterhouse. Can you imagine that? So you pretty much lose faith pretty quickly. So what happened is that she eventually gave birth, and her first son cried very loud when he was born. Screamed, basically, and therefore he was named Ravan. And then she gave birth to Kumbhakarna, and eventually Sarpanaka and Vibhishan. Vibhishan, of course, was the good guy. Somehow or other, she had a little goodness in her. Somehow or other, devotees came by and chanted Hare Krishna while they were doing this, the Garbhadan stuff. And so Vibhishan was born. And Vibhishan was a good devotee. So in any case, so genetically, these people were really demoniac. And then also, there's two things in raising children. There's nature and nurture. Nature is what someone's born with. And there's nurture, which is what happens after you're born. In other words, how you bring up the person. Of course, the point is that nurture is more important than nature. Because by nurture, by proper samskaras, proper association, one can become a great devotee. Or by nurture, a good person can become a demon. That's interesting. I'll give you an example of a good person became a demon. There was Krishna's son by the earth planet. Krishna, in the form of Varaha, impregnated Bhumi. And as a result, little baby Boma was born. And this Boma later on became a demon by bad association, and Krishna himself had to kill him. That was Bomasura. The story's there in the Krishna book. So you see that bad association can drag down even someone who has good genes. Or good association can make someone a devotee even if he has bad genes. So there's genetic stuff, and there's what happens after you're born. So of course with Prahlad Maharaj, he had not such good genes. And by the association of Narada Muni, he became the great pure devotee Prahlad Maharaj. And actually, even sometimes in genetic, the sages were so expert, they could separate the bad genes from the good genes and produce a kid through genetic engineering. You know, test tube babies? You've heard about that before? Like the story of Vena, when he was killed by the brahmanas. What they did is they took, it's described, they churned the body, which is sort of a genetic engineering type of thing, and they took the bad genes out, and he became Bahuka. Remember that story? And then they had the good genes, and that became Prithu and Archie. And they even got a man and his wife from the same genetic pool. Incarnation of God and incarnation of Lakshmi Devi. So these things are there. You know, genetic engineering was there, eugenics was there, breeding people was there, not in a demoniac sense, except in the case of Kekashi and Vishravasa that we mentioned before. But usually it was done with good intentions. You know, you get people of similar natures married, like a king married to someone, or a prince married to someone who was a compatible nature. But the basic point I'm making here is that association is more important, or nurture, as we say, is more important than nature. And the proof of that, of course, is that people born in the Western world with all sorts of bad qualities can actually become devotees. Or like Prabhupada said, hippies turned into happies. Remember that statement Prabhupada made? So hippie means someone with mode of ignorance qualities. Although we may extol the glories of the hippie generation, like that's part of my generation. It was the peace and love generation. You're all too young to remember that. But people were walking around with long hair and doing all sorts of illicit activities. There was this one concert series called Woodstock where they were rolling in the mud with pigs. Did you ever hear that? You heard Woodstock. And singing all sorts of songs about getting back to the garden, smoking marijuana, what did they say, drop out, be in, or something like that. And so, but that was the mode of ignorance. So Prabhupada took these very people, I mean, many of the people who joined the movement became prominent leaders, Prabhupada found in a state that was less than desirable. You know, there was one person who was living naked in a tree in a nudist colony. You know, so here you see, by good association, something wonderful is happening. So this is the story here, that Bali Maharaj really had demoniac genes, because, you know, there was Hiranyakashipu's genes, and he was all this stuff. And he did things that weren't so nice in the beginning. What was the things that he did not so nice? He took over the heavenly planets, got Indra out of there. I mean, usually a devotee's not going to do that. Usually a devotee's not interested in taking over the heavenly planets. He's interested in pure devotional service. I mean, Palad Maharaj was not interested in that at all. But Bali Maharaj, he was interested in that, and he had demoniac qualities in the beginning. Then, by the association of Lord Vamanadeva, and actually it was a trick that Lord Vamanadeva asked for the three steps from him, and fulfilling, doing that devotional service, which is basically was a jata sukriti. I mean, it's not that he was thinking, I want to become a pure devotee of the Lord and chant my rounds and everything like that. But it was a trick. And by that agyata sukriti, he became such a great devotee that he became more powerful than Ravana, and as described here in this verse, and the Lord became his doorkeeper. One interesting thing about this Lord being his doorkeeper is mentioned in the Brihad Bhagavatamrita by Śrīla Sanātana Gosvāmī. In the first part of the Brihad Bhagavatamrita, you have Narada Muni going around and glorifying different devotees, considering different devotees to be the best devotee of the Lord. At one point, he comes to Palad Maharaj, and he says, Palad Maharaj, you're the greatest devotee of the Lord. And Palad Maharaj, he says to Palad Maharaj, yes, that you're so great that the Lord agreed to be the doorkeeper of your grandson, Bali Maharaj. But Palad Maharaj responds to that out of his great humility. And he says to Narada Muni, he says, I'm not so great devotee. Well, first of all I do is remember Krishna. I don't do anything active. And, you know, he even describes one time he had a fraternal fight with Krishna. And then he says, it's not actually a fact that Lord Vamana is just the doorkeeper of Bali Maharaj. The reason he's there is to make sure Bali Maharaj doesn't escape. You know, so he gives a little bit different interpretation than we're having it here. He said, you know, Bali Maharaj created so many problems before, so he's actually like the prison warden you know, the person making sure the Bali Maharaj doesn't get out of there and create any more problems. So that's out of Prahlad Maharaj's dedication and devotion and humility, he say that. But actually, Bali Maharaj has great devotion. He's completely surrendered to the Lord. He's the example of the final principle of the Navabhakti principles, and that's called Atma Nivedanam. You know, surrendering everything to the Lord. The Lord came and took away everything, and then he had nothing else to give the Lord except for his own body, head, body, mind, and words, and soul. And he did that with the Supreme Lord. So, anyway, so these are some of the points we could make here, glorifying Bali Maharaj, but it's by association that Bali Maharaj became a great devotee. So the same way, if we take good association, even though we're born in what's all sorts of families, like Prabhupada said, mixed castes of unknown origin. That's our business. Some of the people, us of European stock, I'm also of European stock, because my family came from Europe. We were like chased out of India by Parashuram. You know, became Yavanas or, isn't it? We were chased out of India for one reason or other, because we weren't really qualified to live in India. Our grandfathers, not us. Great, 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 great grandfathers and grandmothers. So, our mixed, we're mixed breeds. Just like if you have a dog that's not a pedigree. You know what a pedigree dog is? No. Just like if you have a dog. You know, they have these dogs that go to the dog shows that have all their papers of their ancestors there. You ever seen that? Like we had, when I was young, we had a Mexican Chihuahua. You know what a Mexican Chihuahua is? A little tiny dog, like about this small. And when we bought it, it had a whole list of his father, grandfather, great-grandfather. They do that with dogs. You never seen that? Anyone ever heard of that before? That's called pedigree. Yeah. You just like, you can trace someone back to the original dog. The Adi dog, you know. it's funny. So, and if it was a mixed breed, it wouldn't be so expensive. That's called a mongrel in English. You know, it's like just a mixed breed. But, so we're all mixed breeds. Or in English, the word is mongrel. So, Prabhupada did say, they said, mixed breeds of unknown origin. Of course, nowadays they're discovering how to take some genes and actually examine the genes. You know about this, right? And find out your roots, where your family came from. You can do that. You can scrape your tongue off and send part of it. They do this. Anyone's heard of this before? No. And then send it to the laboratory and they'll tell you, oh, your family comes from Outer Mongolia. or Romania, Transylvania, where Dracula came from. So they tell you this. anyway, it's all mixed stuff. It's, you know, the breeds, genetically, you know, it's all useless, basically speaking. Especially in Kali Yuga, Kalo Shudra, Sambhava. Everyone in Kali Yuga is basically Shudra or less. But if by Samskara Bhavet Vijam, we can actually become twice born by what's called samskara. Samskara means a reformatory practice. And the reformatory practice in Kali Yuga, according to the Bhagavatam, is Tasmat Sankirtanam Vishnu. Jangan Mangalam Ahnasam Mahatam Apikauravya Vijikantaka Nishkritam. This is the chanting of the Lord's holy names. Sankirtan. Sankirtan, actually. That means chanting congregationally or absorbed complete chanting. And therefore, whatever our background was before is not important. We just consider what we are now, and we can become absolutely pure devotees of the Lord, if we wish. There's no material impediment. But you must take up good association. If you take bad association, then there's this point about punarmushikabhava, again become a mouse, again become whatever you were before. As soon as you stop the process of Krishna consciousness, you're lax, Lax means you're not attentive in your chanting, or you're not doing your sadhana, then whatever genes you were before, had before, propensities you had before, they'll come up again. That's called punarmruchikabhava, again become a mass. I'm not going to tell that story because everyone knows that story. But and then it comes out again. Like Prabhupada, it was interesting. When Prabhupada was first dealing with us, and we were all hippies before, most of us were hippies, and when people, just when the men started to have a little hair on their heads, you know, like 2 weeks, more than 2 weeks growth, Prabhupada would call them hippie seeds. It's interesting. Hippie seeds. You know, what's wrong with a little hair? It's not. I mean, you have great devotees with more hair than that, right? Like Gaura Vishwadas, Babaji Maharaj had certainly more hair than that. And you find many great devotees, especially during Chaturmasya. Actually, Prabhupada one time said when the Western devotees followed Chaturmasya, sometimes he called it, because they had so much hair, Chaturmes. Because they would grow their hair during, you know, you understand, Chaturmes. It means four messes. Anyways, Prabhupada was very cautious about people falling back into their old habits. And of course, with the hippies, their old habits was growing long hair. I mean, he even had a musical called Hair, right? Where everyone was chanting, hair, hair, hair this, hair that. Right? Does anyone remember that? Yeah, hair. My mother took me to see that when I was young. I was shocked. In the middle of the musical, everyone took their clothes off and was walking around naked on the stage. So I was shocked. I was from a protected family. Not like nowadays. So Prabhupada considered just a little sign of someone's past characteristics from coming back. He considered that a danger sign. Can you imagine that? Hair. Just a little hair. So all hippie seeds. So Prabhupada was very cautious about people falling back into their old habits. So we have to be very careful to always stick to our process of Krishna consciousness to remain fixed in Krishna consciousness. We should be afraid, as Prabhupada said, afraid of Maya. Don't be afraid. Like Prahlad Maharaj, okay, same thing. But Prahlad Maharaj was saved by Lord Nrisimhadev. And Lord Nrisimhadev said, you know, what do you want? Of course, Prahlad Maharaj said, I'm not a servant. I'm not asking for anything. But he said, I'm not afraid of your form of Lord Nrisimhadev, but I'm very much afraid of your illusory energy. Interesting, isn't it? I mean, Prahlad asked for other things, like to save his father, to save other living entities. But the only thing he asked for himself was not to fall into Krishna's illusory energy. So here's a great pure devotee, was saved by the Lord multiple times, who the Lord appeared just to protect him, and he's afraid of Maya. And we have not had any of those experiences. I mean, Lord Nrisimhadev never appeared to me to save me. You know, Krishna has saved me in different ways. That's true. But still, we're not afraid of Maya. It's interesting, isn't it? So we should be afraid of these past genetic or conditioned characteristics or from past lives, subtle body characteristics coming up. And we should be very strict in our performance of bhakti. So any questions or comments about these things? Yes? Leave
them out. So what is our position on eugenics? Is it desirable or despicable?
You mean to create a Superman or something like that?
Well,
I think we have to be very concerned with who marries who. As far as the people who are young who are going to have children, yes. I mean, in the Vedic system, you have this pratilom, analom marriages, as far as compatibility. And in Prabhupada, pratilom means where a lower class man marries a higher class woman, and analom is the opposite. So there was that consideration. There was, Prabhupada said the son usually takes after the mother. You know, there may be some exceptions, but Prabhupada said that's generally the rule. So there's all these considerations with compatibility. I mean, it's not when people get married. That's why in the Vedic system, usually the marriages were arranged by elders. I mean, in every village you had a Brahmin matchmaker. Even Lord Chaitanya's marriages were arranged. He was married twice. First wife, Lakshmi Priya, passed away due to separation. But it was arranged by a matchmaker, a Brahmin matchmaker. And there was practically in every traditional culture you had a matchmaker in the village, isn't it? I know in Europe it was like that, in the small villages. They had one person who arranged marriages in a detached way. Because when people arrange marriages, what do they call it in India, love marriages, then people just don't have the common sense to arrange the right situation. What do I mean? I mean, when one is in love, let's use that expression, when one is enamored, the brain is exactly the same as one who is snorting cocaine. That may come as a surprise to you, but that's a scientific fact. They've done analyses of these things. You know, the brain scan, CAT scan, or MRI. And it's exactly the same. So one loses a sense of judgment. Just like we talked about Kekasi and Vishrava, right? I mean, definitely it was a big mistake. I mean, Vishrava was just like so upset his whole life because he had married this lady and had all these demoniac children. And Ravana took away the kingdom from, we're talking about Lanka. Lanka was originally in the hands of Kuvera. And Ravana took it away from Kuvera. So he had one son fight with the other son. So this poor Vishrava was in such anxiety his whole life. Can you imagine that? And then ultimately, Kaikasi was in anxiety because her children were killed by Ram. So, you know, what a disaster. Of course, it was the Lord's pastimes. I understand. I mean, there's another level of understanding that, you know, the Lord wanted his associate, Jayan Vijaya, to appear, Ravana and Kumbhakarna. And later on, Sarpanaka actually got liberated too. She became Kubja in the next incarnation. And she got a chance to be with Ram. Krishna. You understand? That's interesting. So, I mean, there's a happy ending to the story. But there was a lot of anxiety in the meantime. Both Vishravas and Kaikasi were in anxiety over the whole thing. You know, the children just didn't act the way they wanted to. Kekasi was in anxiety because Vibhishan was a good guy. He said, why did I give birth to this devotee? Oh my God. And anyway, so therefore, yes, we should be concerned with breeding. Not as something demoniac, not that we go into the laboratories and, you know, just like, they do test tube babies.
Yeah, that's sterilized.
Yeah.
The whole Western world
was into eugenics. They started in America and Great Britain. In America, they were sterilizing people. They thought
they might have been like the first country to introduce.
America was, yeah. Yeah, they were sterilizing people that they thought didn't have the right mentality. They shouldn't breed. I mean, eugenics was way before Hitler. He learned it from the Americans. And the British also were into it too. The British published. There were some scientists who published books on it. In the UK. So, you know, everything good comes from the UK and America. So, anyways, we have to be concerned with, you know, the proper type of offspring. Like, of course, Prabhupada did say if people have the proper consciousness, they'll attract the proper type of child. But marriages should be considered in terms of varna. I mean, otherwise it's just a disaster. You know, if you have a Brahmin lady marry a Shudra man, I mean, or vice versa. You know, they may be in love in the beginning, but then after a few months, forget it. The new factor wears off. And then they're stuck with Ravana. I mean, Ravana was handsome. He wasn't just like some ugly guy. All the princesses that were kidnapped by Ravana, because he had thousands and thousands of princesses. They all loved him. Because he couldn't force himself upon any princess because he had been cursed that if he ever did that, because he did it one time, he would die. So everyone had to accept him voluntarily. All the girls have to accept him voluntarily. So. Anyway, we're going to probably have to end. One quick question, and then we can end class. Yeah.
I thought Brahma had 9 heads.
10 heads.
10 heads.
10 heads. Well, Dasa agreed, but 10 heads, yeah.
How can that be true?
No. He manifested them when he was angry.
Okay.
It's not that every minute he was walking around with 10 heads and put 10 hats on, 10 sets of glasses, you know. Whenever he wanted to, he could manifest them. And also he chopped off his heads 10 times. Anyway, there's a whole story in the mind. But he had 10 heads. And he could have a whole GBC meeting when he wanted to. You know, they could all discuss different things. What do you think about this? Okay, I think it's a good idea. Should we get an MC? No, I don't think it's a good idea. Yeah, one more question.
I'm just wondering, if Ravana cannot force himself upon a woman, why didn't he give her the sister?
Because he thought she would give in to him. He was envious of Ram, and she was very beautiful. And he just thought, you know, she's going to eventually give it. So he kept trying to convince her. He could try to convince in different ways. One time he produced an artificial head of Lord Ram just to try to convince her that Ram was dead. And then he tried to attract her with wealth. He said, look, you marry me, you got this whole kingdom, I'll become your obedient servant. I mean, what woman wouldn't want that? I mean, if Ravan, who is more powerful and handsome, super handsome, I mean, he's like the Terminator or whatever. Whatever, you know, so... You know, just imagine some, for those of you from India, Bollywood star, actor, Vivek Oberoi, or, you don't know him, no one knows him, or some Hollywood, or, you know, some famous person, I don't know. I don't know anybody nowadays, except I just know India, so. So imagine that. He comes up to you, you know, and he has so much wealth, a palace of gold. And he's going to become your servant. Wow. Forget about that other husband I have. I mean, most ladies would be like that, right? Not every lady. But it takes a lot of self-control. Or even with a man. Let's say a beautiful lady comes up to a man. He's married, ready to a nice chaste girl. Then, you know, someone comes up, like an apsara comes up. You know, apsara? Like Urvasi comes up. You know, obviously he may forget about his wife. So Ravana was of that level, or even higher, that he was so attractive. That so he was sure that Sita would actually forget Ram. Of course, she was so chaste, there was no question in her mind of forgetting Ram. But he had this pride. He knew he couldn't force himself, and he didn't. He would have died. And actually, it wasn't even Sita he kidnapped. He kidnapped Maya Sita, but that's a different story. So anyway, we have to end class because I've got to go right now. All glories to Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada, Ki Jai. Gaura Premananda, Hari Hari Bo.